Yeah, just those deep blue glaciers and icebergs, and the shapes of the icebergs are unbelievable. They're like snowflakes because not one of them is the same. They never will be the same. They're constantly changing and breaking down.
Welcome to Wild Development Studio. Join us as we venture into the breathtaking realm of wildlife arts and untamed adventures. With captivating stories from the field and ideas to dive into the visual arts, we'll ignite your passion for conservation. Get ready to develop something wild.
Since 2008, Ralph Valesco has been a full-time travel photographer and international tour organizer, having created and led over 120 five-star rated international tours in over 30 countries on six continents, plus over 100 domestic tours in the U.S. When he is not traveling, Ralph can be found in Chicago, his hometown. However, he has been location independent, meaning he has no permanent home, for over 10 plus years, and traditionally spends anywhere from 8 to 9 months on the road internationally scouting and leading his tours. He operates Continental Drifter Experiences and has a YouTube channel under Continental Drifters, as well as a podcast called Travel Thoughts from a Continental Drifter, which can be found on Apple Podcasts. He has written several books and ebooks, including 60 Affirmations for Travel, 60 Gratitudes for Travel, and the Continental Drifter's Epic Bucket List for Travel. For over 10 years, he has been a featured speaker on travel and photography at the travel and adventure shows throughout the U.S. and the New York Times Travel Show. Well, welcome to the show. Very wild welcome. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
I'm excited to hear all about you. Just went to Antarctica. How do you prepare for a trip like that?
Yeah, you think that it is like the wildest place I've ever been. It's really off the grid, I felt like, you know, boy, I've really got to think about the clothes and everything, and you do. But when I was there just last week, in their summer, the weather is actually not as cold as even here in Chicago and, you know, the Midwest or Canada and a lot of places in Europe at this same time of year. So it was just about wearing, you know, layers, and I wear layers. You know, I'm always talking to my clients about packing in layers, and kind of I pack almost the same for 90% of the trips that I do, unless it's something like in Antarctica or Lapland or something where, you know, I might be out for a while in those kinds of conditions. But you know, it's just maybe extra pair of long johns or some sweats that might go under some waterproof clothing. So that was what I was mostly concerned about, of course, was the weather, because you're everything down there is based upon the weather.
It's interesting that it's not as cold as even Chicago at this time,
especially about a month ago when we had that deep freeze go through.
Yeah, getting there, did you like fly in and then take a boat, or what was the travel like? Because I've always heard like the waters surrounding Antarctica are really rough.
That's right. And you have the Drake Passage that goes, there's where three oceans come together. You've got the Pacific, the Atlantic, and the Southern Oceans come together there. Very fairly narrow strait, the Drake Passage. And so you get a lot of very rough waters. I'm a sailor, but I had no interest in actually taking a ship across the waters there, where you could potentially have 20, 30, even 50 foot waves and swells. I had one person on this trip. So to get to your point, we fly back and forth from Punta Arenas, Chile. It's a 2-hour flight, less than 2 hours. I think it was an hour and 40 minute flight. So it's like less than going from Chicago to New York or something. It's a really just, and it's not a puddle jumper. It's a pretty large sort of 3-3 aircraft, high wing jet, but it, you know, almost like a 737. with flight attendants and everything. It was, you know, we had lunch and it was just like almost like a regular flight. But what I was going to say is one of the gentlemen on this trip with me, because I organize and lead tours around the world, and this was with a group. This was his second attempt to go to Antarctica, because the last trip that he went on, someone actually died on the journey over because of large swells. And I, from what I understand, he was walking down the hallway and on the ship, and I think he just got slammed into the side of the wall because of some huge rogue wave or something. And it's just a horrible thing to happen, but yeah, I prefer that not happen on my trips. So right. We fly down and, you know, I just had the most wonderful experience. Yeah. You know?
So this gentleman was so determined to get to Antarctica, he didn't let, wow. So
yeah,
through the travel and everything, was it totally worth going?
Oh my gosh. I mean, it's a long way down, because I took a screenshot of like my position on my cell phone, or, you know, where you could get that little blue dot of wherever you are in the world. And I mean, it's down on the absolute tip of South America, where Punta Arenas is. And so the idea is to get down to Punta Arenas for everyone. And I had people coming from all over the U.S. on this trip. There was people on the, you know, from Europe and Australia and all over the world, of course, meeting down there to then fly together to the continent. But you realize how far that is. So, but it was really just flying Chicago to Miami, Miami to Santiago, which is about 8 hours, and then maybe another three to Punta Arenas, stay overnight, and then the next day fly an hour 40 minutes to the continent. So it's a long way to go, because you're literally going to the bottom of the earth. But it was absolutely amazing. I often talk about, you get on this steel metal tube and you get on in Chicago, and a few hours later you get off in Antarctica and you're just like in absolutely another world, literally almost. You know, it's just such an incredibly wild, pristine and otherworldly environment. You know, you're off the grid.
You're in Chicago. I'm in the Cincinnati area. We have so much noise around us at all times that I'm sure we're not even used to, like cars and planes and houses. What is the sound like in Antarctica?
That's a great question. And it's funny, because the only sound you hear is the ship when you're moving and or you're near it. But then they take you in Zodiacs, and this is a 67-passenger ship. So it's the smallest in the industry down there. But it's a big ship, former icebreaker from Greenland. It goes up to the north in the, you know, when it's winter in Antarctica. So it moves from different poles, or from, you know, the different circles. And so you hear the ship, of course, you hear the Zodiacs, but when you get off, it's silence, or maybe you just hear the animals, which is the squawking of the penguins, or the most incredible sound of the whales, which, you know, I've seen whales in documentaries. I've seen them live. I used to live in Southern California. We'd go whale watching there. But there, perhaps because it was so quiet, and we're, you know, the Zodiac's turned off, we're just sitting there, we want to not disturb the whales, which are very close. But when they spout, you know, when they come up to breathe, it's absolutely unbelievable. I never had heard a sound like that. I didn't know that that's what they did, but it's almost a roar. You know, it's not just an air sound coming out of their spout, I'll call it. I'm not sure that's a technical term for it.
Blowhole. But
the other thing, blowhole, there you go. Thank you. And, but what's funny is that we were on this one landing, and you get off this boat, depending on the weather, and it's same for any boat, you get off, you're totally weather dependent. So, you know, if it's a bad day and they don't think it's safe, you're not going to get off, but they'll cruise you around and you could see things, but for your own safety, they don't let you off. But we had great weather, and we got off at this one place, and we'd walked around for a while, and all the Zodiacs were silent, and you might hear some other people on the train or something, but or maybe the occasional crash of a calving of a glacier, but at a helicopter, I could hear this helicopter in the distance. I'm like, that's out of place. What is that? And then we realized it was a helicopter that, was doing a scenic flight or something, or it might have been one of the research stations that was, doing something, but it was so out of place down there. It was incredible. So yeah, great question about that down there.
That sounds absolutely incredible. And the whales, were they beluga whales, orca whales, or?
We did not see orcas. I don't think there are belugas. Those are probably in the Arctic. South is, I want to say they were gray whales.
Oh, cool.
But the huge, huge whales with the big tails and everything. And they come up and they surface and they do this very interesting behavior where they get together in two or three or four. I'll call it a pod. I don't know if those whales are considered a pod, but they gather in small groups. They blow air from below the water, which concentrates the krill in the sort of circular wall of bubbles, and then they just come up and scoop them up with their huge mouths, which is truly incredible. And one of the girls on the trip found a krill, it's a shrimp. It's a type of shrimp. And I had never really seen one. And to think that these enormous creatures survive on this tiny little creature, and that the whole, the whole food chain is based on this little creature, who then also feeds on microscopic creatures, and how delicate that chain is. It's fascinating. And they told us, because they have daily talks, and they talk about different things, and it's very interesting, especially if you have bad weather and you can't go out. They'll kind of fill the time with these fascinating researchers. They had people on the ship that had been going down there for 40, 50 years, and their grandfathers had been going for another 50 years. So really, really experienced people. And one of the guys told us that the krill, I think it's the biomass of krill, is like the biggest in the world of any, living creature. So there's more krill by biomass than any other in the world. So that was pretty interesting.
That is interesting. I mean, I guess there'd have to be, because they feed like whale sharks and all these huge animals.
Exactly. Yes. And then, man, with those huge mouth scoop up a lot of time. I want to say it was like 2 tons a day or something, each one. Yeah.
Wow. My goodness.
That was something.
Your company is called Continental Drifter.
Continental Experiences. Yep.
Experiences. Okay. That's so,
yeah.
That's an incredible job, by the way. Dream job. So, was this your first time to Antarctica?
It was. I sent a group last year of four people, but this is the first time that I actually went, and I'm so glad I did. I've always wanted to go, but to be honest, it wasn't that high on my list. I mean, it wasn't like, oh, I have to tick off the seventh continent or something, but I am so glad I went, and I say that it's the best trip I've ever taken. It's not an inexpensive trip, but man, is it worth saving up for and doing. It's a once in a lifetime thing, for sure.
I believe it.
So, and I can't wait to do it again next year.
Oh, wow.
That's the best part of my job, is I get to go back to these places.
Yeah. And I imagine when you're on these trips and leading, you get pretty close with all the other people. Are you guys like this tight-knit group, and you're experiencing a place that's like another world and having incredible experiences?
Absolutely. I have the best people on my trips, and almost everyone becomes great friends, and I've got over 50% repeat rates. So people know each other from previous trips. They see each other on future trips. I do reunions where people get together in like mostly Chicago and Southern California, where I used to live, and kind of created a following. And I'll have these reunions. So we're having one in a couple of weeks here in Chicago. And it's just great to have everyone together. Most everyone knows each other, like I say, from other trips, and become really good friends. I tend to attract a similar type of traveler. And the ages are probably like 40s plus, 40s to 70s, maybe even into the 80s. But typically, you know, people that are good walkers, they're must be well traveled, because, you know, like places that I go to, like Cuba or Antarctica, are typically not their first trip. So they're very well traveled. They've been around. They've got great stories. And they're all similar types of people that are able to, because I do about a half day scheduled activities, half day free time. So it attracts a type of traveler that's okay with filling their free time and doesn't feel like they need to be handheld 12 hours a day. And wait, I've got 3 hours. What am I going to do? You know, no, great. 3 hours. I'm going to go do this or that, that maybe it's not on the itinerary, or my spouse doesn't, you know, it may not be interested in what we're doing. They've got a different interest. So, or I just want to sit by the pool or in a cafe. And so it works out really well. And that sort of filters out that big group traveler, because my trips are only 6 to 10 people. So it's very intimate, and everyone becomes very close and very good friends.
Sounds worth it alone just for the community. And
yeah, like the networking community. Exactly. It's really fun. And you get to share it with, because it's fun to, you know, I've traveled a lot on my own. I did a round the world trip for 5 months by myself, but it's lonely. It can be very lonely. And sure, you meet people along the way, but you don't have that common experience for a period of time. And that's always so fun to share it with people.
So you're a photographer too, right?
Yeah, I teach travel photography, and I started out with my trips being more like I would call them photo tours. I've kind of moved away from, because like the smartphone photography is so big now. Everyone's some sort of a photographer. It's so much easier to be a photographer these days. You've got these very powerful devices in our pockets. But you know, whether you're a photographer or not, whether you call yourself a photographer or not, you probably are in some sense. You've got that smartphone in your pocket, and you're going to want to take some pictures in these amazing places. So I love to help people get great shots, because we can all get the snapshot. But how do you make that, you know, tweak it just 10% and make it a great shot? And it's so easy to do, and you can do it with any device. So I really get off on showing people how, you know, this little tweak or doing something differently, you know, just having a different perspective or something that will make your photo go from a good shot to a great shot.
That's great advertisement for you too. Like, where did you do this?
Yeah.
Well, you got to go with
exactly
director experiences. Yeah. What?
Yeah. Yeah. The better shots people get, the better my trips look, right?
Yeah, exactly. Did you have to have any special considerations for your camera or your gear when you were down in Antarctica?
No, not really. We were talking about clothing earlier. I mean, for like two or three of the 4 days that we were really down there and sailing, we didn't even have to wear gloves. So you had access to any sort of buttons and dials on any type of camera. But we did, everyone bought a sort of around the neck case that you could slide your phone into, that you could shoot through. And it's nice to not have to find a pocket for it if you do have gloves and you're wearing bigger, bulky clothes. So it just, you just, and it's still on your neck, and you pick it up to take a shot. So that's really nice. You can bring tripods down there. There's an avian flu that they're afraid of sort of spreading down there. And so you're, every time you get off the ship, you need to put your boots in a certain solution. When you get off the boat, and when you get back off land, they've got like a little scrubber thing. It's almost like if you're a golfer where you clean your cleats off, it's like a brush that you just you know, move your feet on to kind of get any excess dirt off. Then when you get back on the boat, you step in that solution again. So they provide the boots, which is really nice. So you don't have to bring these big, huge waterproof boots that they provide for free, and you don't have to carry them, which, you know, can take up a third of a, you know, carry on bag or something or more, you know. But yeah, so my point was that they don't even want you to kneel on the ground or sit down because of spreading, the potential of spreading things. And so tripods are, they're accepted, but, you know, a little bit frowned upon. Mm-hmm. So no, to make a long story longer, there are really not a whole lot of special equipment at all. I shot with my iPhone the entire time, and especially video, and, you know, encouraging people to not just get the photos, but man, those smartphones, there's video, there's time lapse, slow motion, audio, panoramas. They're just incredibly powerful devices that are right in our pockets.
What was your favorite photograph that you took while you were down there?
Well, as I mentioned, I mostly shot video, but we were in this one place called Charlotte's Bay, and the ships go to where the weather is better. So there's no set itinerary. I learned that there's probably 70 ships down there, and we didn't see another ship the whole time.
Wow.
And they all sort of have, they all have this kind of a reservation where, okay, my ship's going to go to Charlotte Bay this day. Other ones are going other places in order to kind of spread things out. Cause you don't want, you know, six or eight ships in a small bay. Plus, you know, you want your clients, I think, to feel like they're on their own, which we really did, which was so fantastic. You really know you're off the grid and it's a pristine environment. Didn't see a candy wrapper, a Coke bottle or anything anywhere. So, but the Charlotte's Bay was absolutely wonderful. And we had it completely to ourselves. You're surrounded like 320 degrees by glaciers and mountains, and 98% of Antarctica is high ice and snow. Only 2% of it can you see through that. And, you know, you can tell that there's a continent underneath there. But that bay was so still, and you've got these beautiful reflections, and everywhere you look is glaciers. And they announced on the speaker, they always announce what we're going to do, or maybe they see us have a sighting or something, so people go to check it out. So right when we docked there, the main guy said, hey, there's an emperor penguin sitting on an iceberg right in front of the ship. And it's like, okay, a penguin, that's great. Well, emperor penguins are not known to be in this area at all. And so this guy was definitely off course. He was lost. And, you know, it was a real unique sighting. And so even the crew were super excited to see this emperor penguin in this place. So we got some great photos and video of this guy just cruising around. You could tell he was kind of confused. And he was jumping on and off the iceberg, swimming around us, under us. And we thought he might even jump in the boat, you know, at one point, because sometimes if there's something under the water, they'll do that. You know, if there's a seal or some kind of predator, they will jump up onto a boat, which I thought would be really cool if he did.
Yeah.
Never did.
Aww.
Yeah, just those deep blue glaciers and icebergs, and the shapes of the icebergs are unbelievable. They're like snowflakes because not one of them is the same. They never will be the same. They're constantly changing and breaking down and flipping. And never did see that. So just kind of caught the tail end of a couple calvings where the glaciers fall into the water. But man, I wanted to get that one, you know, shot that was going to go viral, where that whole mountain falls down into the sea, because I know someone's going to get it, and I wanted it to be me.
Well, that's why you got to go back next year, right?
That's right. That's right. It'll probably fall down.
Now, I used to work with penguins, and they have quite a special smell to them. But Did you hang out with a big colony of penguins, and are they just as smelly?
Yeah, for sure. It was the chin strap penguins. Yeah, they definitely have a particular smell. But it was maybe hundreds, you know, not like the 300,000 that you might find on some places down there. But yeah, you definitely, if you're downwind, you're going to know it. And they are so cute and so fun. It's a little chin straps, and they're just waddling up the hill. And what you probably know this, but you know, you see these ones that are on the, they kind of, that's where their nests are, or high up. I think they want to get away from predators and stuff. Because you're like, why don't they nest near the water so that they don't have to have this long walk up a hill? Then they have to hop up all these really rough rocks to get up to their nest. Well, I'm pretty sure it's, you know, to keep away from predators. And they do this 3-4 times a day, up and down, up and down. Well, the ones that are up there are all dirty. They've got what looks like blood on them. I said it looks like, you know, they've been shot or something. When they come down from there and go to the water, you see the ones that are coming up are white as can be, clean and belly full, and the ones going down are really dirty, and you can't really tell if their belly's empty. But it's such a, you know, I didn't even notice that until the guide, you know, said, hey, did you recognize that? I'm like, that is so cool. You know exactly which way they're going, and they do that 3-4 times a day, both the, you know, the on the female parent.
Now, you also have a book that came out, 60 Affirmations for Travel. What inspired you to write this?
Yeah, it's a book that I wrote. It's meant to have people be more present when they travel, to be a more intentional and mindful traveler. I find myself when I'm traveling that the more I travel, the more I try to be mindful. You know, we're excited. We want to see things. We want to do everything, photograph everything. The first tip in my first book, 101 Tips for Developing Your Photographic Eye, is it's not about the camera, meaning that it doesn't matter what kind of camera you have, especially today. And that book was written like 12 years ago. But now we've got these amazing devices in our pockets. But the last tip is put the camera down. Don't spend your whole trip seeing it through the viewfinder of a camera. Spend time being there, being mindful. So these affirmations, and again, there's 60 of them. I figured if you did it for, you know, 2 months, you'd have affirmation for one a day. These affirmations are meant to bring you sort of back to that place. When I first started traveling, one of the first trips I did when I was 16 was I went to Peru with a group from my high school. And the one thing I remember from that trip was they always said, be here now. Just be here. Don't be thinking about, oh man, I wish I had, you know, Burger King back home because this food is so different or whatever. Be here now. And so it's meant to bring you back to place and be a mindful and more intentional traveler.
I love it. It looks like it's a coloring book too.
Yeah, there's some, adult coloring books are a thing now, which I really didn't realize, but I wanted to include that. Something, it's meant for, you know, sitting in an airport or on an airplane. And maybe, you know, your battery ran out on your phone, you can't watch a video or something. So, yeah, a little coloring book. And they're very simple travel icons and things like that. I'm working on a 60 Gratitudes for Travel next. And that will have more detailed mandalas and things that are much more detailed for coloring. So these are very simple. I found these beautiful travel icons that are also meant to inspire you to think about new and different places as well. But it's available on Amazon, and if anyone does purchase it right now, it's I think by the time this comes out, the price will have been raised to the regular $11.99. But if people could put in a review, that's so helpful. I would really appreciate it.
And I will be putting the links for the book and Continental Drifter Experiences. And you got a YouTube too. So I'll be putting the links in the show description so people can easily get to your sites. And I love this the idea of journaling and being more present with your 60 affirmations for travel. I started a travel journal a couple of years ago. And then when I look back at it, it's almost like I am transported back in time and I'm back in that spot because I took the time to be aware of my surroundings and getting up and out of my device. I think that's a great tool that you've got for people.
I like that, up and out of your device. That's great. That's a great way to put it. Yeah. And there are some blank pages with line blank pages for you to write notes exactly and your thoughts from that day. And, you know, I've got journals from that trip to Peru in 1980. And I go back from time to time and relive those memories. You know, over time, we forget things for sure. And these bring back such great travel memories.
Mm-hmm. What would you say your most popular trip is through your company?
Well, the trip I've done the most is a support for the Cuban people trip to Cuba. I've done that 18 times now. And these are licensed U.S. government approved trips. We go through the front door through Miami. And that's a wonderful trip. I did it 18 times from 2010 to 2018. And I haven't been in 6 years. And I'm going back in March. And I'm really looking forward to that, bringing that trip back, because it's such an amazing place. And I want to share it with people. And you can really only go legally with someone like me. You know, you can try to sneak in. I don't recommend it. But it's an amazing place. With they say the Cubans are the most pro-American people in Latin America. And you know, we think that there's this real rivalry there, but it's really just our governments. And it's the U.S. government that's created this boycott that, you know, makes it difficult for us to get down there. But it's a truly amazing place, and the people are wonderful, and I highly recommend it. That's my most popular trip. Antarctica is becoming popular. I mean, the people are really interested in going there. I'm surprised how many people have been there already when I talk to my clients or announce the trip. But I also do a lot of Europe. Spain is one of my favorite destinations. That was my first trip back in 79 in high school. So Spain is a place I'm very close to my heart. I speak Spanish. My last name is Spanish. And so I have roots there. But and I hope to move there in the next year or so. I've always wanted to move to Europe, and I'm location independent now, so pretty easy to move where I'd like to.
Now, what is your favorite affirmation in your book?
Ooh, gosh, I don't have them memorized, but I'm gonna look, because I've got a few highlighted. I've got the book right here.
Nice.
But one of my favorites is each new place I visit adds to my life's rich tapestry. And, you know, it just says that, you know, our lives are filled with experience, are made up of experiences. And so every new place you go to adds to that tapestry that is our lives. And so that's one of my favorites. And it kind of just, you know, it doesn't have to be some exotic place. It could be any place, really. But everything we do, every experience we have, is part of our life's tapestry.
That is perfect. What a great way to end the show. I can't believe it's almost been 40 minutes already. You've got so many great stories. And before we do go, what is one tip that you have for someone that would like to connect with nature?
Well, it's easy for me to say, but go to Antarctica. And it was such, like I said, you know, you're off the grid. You're in this pristine environment. You feel like, you know, you don't see another man-made object. You don't see telephone poles and towers and, you know, buildings or anything. Unless you look back at the ship from shore or something. So getting that far off the grid is great. Now, you don't have to go to the bottom of the world to do that. But, you know, just walking out your own back door or getting to the local park nearby, you know, getting off the beaten path and into nature is always fun. And I'm sure you've probably heard of forest bathing.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard of that term?
Yep.
Yeah. So just going out and sort of being a part of nature. And they say, you know, the real hardcore ones, they say, go out there without shoes on, and you know, you'll feel that. It's a little bit woo woo, but I believe it to an extent. And you know, there's nothing like, I mean, that's where we came from, so how could it not be a good thing?
I absolutely agree. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story with us, Ralph.
Thank you very much, Lauren. I really appreciate it.
And until next time, get outside and see what develops.
Thanks for joining Wild Development Studio. We hope this exploration into the world of wildlife arts and adventure has sparked a desire to get outside and connect with something wild. If you have an adventure that's awe-inspiring, don't hesitate to share. Click the link in the description to submit your story to have it featured on our show or be a guest. Until next time, keep connecting to the wild and see what develops. The views, opinions, and statements expressed by individuals during Wild Development Studio Productions do not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of Wild Development Studio or its affiliates. Participation in any activities, expeditions, or adventures discussed or promoted during our content may involve inherent risks. It is strongly advised that individuals conduct thorough research, seek professional guidance, and take all necessary precautions before engaging in any such activities. Wild Development Studio, its representatives, or employees shall not be held responsible for any injury, loss, damage, accident, or unforeseen incident that may occur as a result of participating in activities inspired by or discussed in our content. By choosing to engage with our content or act upon any information provided, individuals do so at their own risk and discretion.